It is Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ken Klippenstein, here to discuss his latest piece in The Intercept on Amazon's anti-worker, anti-union measures. Meanwhile, Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski have officially said they will vote yes on Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation, joining Susan Collins. Schumer is set to file cloture this morning, which means that later this week, KBJ will very likely get the votes needed to put her on the Supreme Court. Republicans have more than halved Biden's coronavirus relief request. Schumer and Romney have announced a compromise on testing, research, and therapeutic funding. $10 billion as opposed to the White House's original $22.5 billion request. So no money for the global vaccination effort in this package, says the GOP. In Ukraine, Russian forces have appeared to retreat from Kyiv, but military experts warn that this could be a way to reposition and ramp up its attacks in the Donbass. Images of civilian bodies bound and blindfolded in dirt in Bucha, a suburb of Kyiv, begin to trickle out. Biden says that it constitutes a war crime, which it does, if proven. I mean, I don't even need to say that. It constitutes a war crime. And the EU considers a resolution to ban Russian coal in response. The IPCC released a report yesterday that warned that the world must have its greenhouse emissions in 3 years or face an unstoppable chain reaction in our ecosystem outside of human control. And lastly, it's not an easy transition. Elon Musk has become Twitter's largest shareholder, purchasing 9.2% of the company. Twitter was fun while it lasted. All this and more on today's program. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. No, it is not Thursday. Don't worry. You're not losing your mind. It's Tuesday. Sam had to take a day off today because his son is sick. Very sad. So hope Saul gets better. I know, yeah, it's been a little bit rough. Has a bit of a bug. So I'm here holding down the fort for today. Later in the program, we'll be speaking to Ken Klippenstein, and we'll also be going through the news talking about, I don't know, that we'll touch on Howard Schultz in a second, but between Amazon, Starbucks, all of these other smaller union efforts around the country, we're really witnessing a historic moment. And so a good portion of the show, we're going to dedicate to talking about that.
Also, we're going to talk about, in the fun half, we're going to talk about J.D. Vance.
Yeah, you're really excited about that.
Yeah, I found out a new thing about him.
Matt has been doing some research, been collecting some drops, and some music.
There's going to be a musical accompaniment.
Yes, but don't play that drop that you played before the show because all right, here it goes. This is like something that sends chills down my spine. I just you all have to experience this pain if I did.
Tim Kaine in the membrane. Tim Kaine in the brain. Yeah.
You know, he might EGOT. He might get all of the awards.
Well, he's so talented.
That's what every one of my parents' friends tells me, yes. So let's turn to Starbucks here. Howard Schultz is on a full-blown PR tour as Starbucks, different locations of Starbucks stores have been unionizing. Since December, 9 Starbucks stores have voted to unionize, and 8 of those were successful in Arizona, in New York, in Washington, and around 180 Starbucks stores have filed petitions with the Starbucks Workers Union, United Union, to start organizing themselves. So this is setting off a chain reaction across the country with Starbucks stores. And that's terrifying, Howard Schultz. So he's on this PR tour. Here is an article from the Wall Street Journal yesterday, where in the first line of this piece, they'll say that these stock buybacks are temporary. Do we have this up? Yeah. The headline here, Starbucks' Schultz, back as CEO, prioritizes baristas over stock price. So that's how the Wall Street Journal frames it. And if you read it,
what a nice guy.
Yeah, they clearly got access to Schultz for this. And so I've been watching the Theranos show, right? With Elizabeth Holmes, The Dropout. I should do my impression of her later. Maybe I'll do it now. What's a good phrase to say of her? I can't do it right now. Yeah, no, but it's not. It's like, we're very happy about our achievements in Theranos. Anyway, so, but like, they go to the Wall Street Journal and that she did for a fluff piece in order to take some of the heat off of her. And that's clearly what Schultz is doing here. This is his third time as CEO. They're calling in the big guns when they're worried about unions. Schultz held a town hall meeting with Starbucks employees in order to just cool it on the unionization effort here. They call their employees partners. Do they treat them as such?
Yeah.
Not so much.
Also, remember last time he did this, he mentioned stuff about Holocaust blankets. That was extremely confusing and maybe it hastened the unionization efforts. So let's see what he does here.
Yeah, maybe he can top it.
Now, here's where it gets a little sensitive, because I've been coached a little bit, but I do want to...
He sounds like he's been coached by Jordan Peterson in this delivery a little bit.
Yeah, right.
I'm just feeling so many emotions about you trying to collectively bargain.
Let's see if he'll start crying and, speaking in tongues or something like that.
Now, here's where it gets a little sensitive, because I've been coached a little bit, but I do want to talk about something pretty serious. We can't ignore what is happening in the country as it relates to companies throughout the country being assaulted in many ways by the threat of unionization.
Assaulted. So that's him talking to Starbucks employees. You know, I don't know. What's the legality on that kind of phrasing? Maybe he gets to work around it because he's talking more abstractly about other companies, you know, just like theoretically around the country who are assaulted by the threat of unionization. I mean, like, it's so passive aggressive because, as I mentioned,
you know what? Yeah, what an assault is laying people off because they were organizing and not admitting that's what you're doing, but pretending it's because of some infraction, which is what Starbucks is doing to folks around the country.
Right, right. And like, then they have these cozy town halls where Howard Schultz calls them partners while behind the scenes retaliating against them for unionizing. I mean, I didn't realize that unionization was like an act of violence against a company. I mean, that is
capitalists. It is.
Hey. For them it is, and that might be the only instance in which, you know, I'm in favor of that kind of stuff. But yeah, like, violence against a company, fine, right? If that's how you want to characterize it.
It's violence against the dictatorial, tyrannical side of business, which
yes.
is like, we decide if you have a livelihood or not, if you have sustenance or not, and it's all dependent on how well we decide you're serving us.
Right. And so they have a carrot and a stick approach here too, whereas like, behind the scenes, they're going to fire you in retaliation for trying to unionize. And then publicly facing, they'll try to use this all this flowery language. Howard Schultz is calling you a partner. He's doing a town hall and an open forum where he's not even on the stage. He's in the center of the room. He's one of you, even though this is his third time as CEO coming back to the company when they really need somebody to stamp out unionization efforts and make sure that Starbucks is as profitable as it once was.
It's like he's going for the youth pastor vibe with this layout they got here too.
Yes. Makes it a lot cozier there. So again, so that was at the town hall that was held by Howard Schultz there. But he didn't stop. He didn't stop there. You know, don't worry, Starbucks employees. They're temporarily pausing stock buybacks. You may not be able to join a union, which would raise your wages, improve your working conditions, which were terrible under COVID, and lovely lefty, or pretend lefty, Howard Schultz didn't seem to care about that whatsoever. But you will maybe get an NFT.
Okay, let me give you another tidbit. I shouldn't say this, but what the
hell? Whoa, he's going off script.
I shouldn't say this.
Okay.
Wait, hold on, pause it. This is so mannered. I shouldn't say this, but I'm so excited about this opportunity for our partners that I had to reveal this to you.
Okay. Look at this shiny new object we're going to give you. You think collective bargaining sounds good? Let's think about non-fungible tokens.
I'm not a digital native, obviously. Raise your hand if you're a digital native. That's not a very strong hand. Who's a digital native?
Oh, shut up.
No one? Adam Brodman's a digital native. Okay. How many people have followed what has been happening with NFTs? Wow.
Wow.
How many people have participated in investing in NFTs?
Oh, my God. This is so
how are you doing? Okay, for now. Okay. So if you look at, I try to be a student with all this, not being a digital native. If you look at the companies, the brands, the celebrities, the influencers that are trying to create a digital NFT platform and business, I can't find one of them that has the treasure trove of assets that Starbucks has, from collectibles to the entire heritage of the company. So.
What?
Here's the secret. Sometime before the end of this calendar year.
Collectibles?
We are going to be in the NFT business. Okay?
Oh, that is some unenthusiastic applause. So what does that even mean? I mean, again, it's just like distract you from maybe organizing with your employees. And by the way, fellow employees, Howard Schultz has tried this. You mentioned that he had this other town hall, but he had meetings, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, with like in person with stores that were trying to unionize because they were so terrified of this. Something tells me he doesn't have the deft hand to handle this, Starbucks CEOs, if you actually think that, like, you know, you need to call in the big guns to stamp out this union effort, or there's no amount of flowery language or NFTs or pretend end to stock buybacks that can get in the way of workers understanding their value and their worth and how they need to be paid a living wage and more, and need to, I mean, in the end, the goal is for workers to own more of the means of production, but at least in the interim, in these major corporations like Starbucks, there needs to be better working conditions and better wages. And like, that has been what has come out a lot of this pandemic and what we're seeing across the countries, and understanding that there's power in numbers. And, you can stand up to people like Howard Schultz, no matter how many, you know, bored apes they throw at you and Wall Street Journal pieces that they collaborate with the author on to make themselves look good.
It's the perfect demonstration of this whole crypto thing as just the new shiny object that capitalists are using to distract people away from demands of like decommodified healthcare and housing and public education and things like that. Like, I don't even know what he's trying to say. Like, Starbucks is perfectly, because of their assets, like what assets, the ones that you should be returning to
your workers
as wages. Because like the only other kind of assets that make sense as far as the collectibles go are like the NBA has assets in terms of like IP over players, or Disney has assets over like characters that, you know, that make good for like Burger King toys or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't understand what Starbucks has that is at all similar to that. Like, you have like maybe like the mermaid is the only thing.
Yeah.
I want the NFT of the original mermaid design. Like, bro, no one cares. Give us healthcare and let us determine the conditions of our workplace.
And then he doesn't even explicitly say that the partners, aka that his employees, will be involved in this NFT project. He just says Starbucks is going to get involved in. So people are like, okay, like, at least if you're going to get involved in a Ponzi scheme, can I get some of the spoils?
It's so funny that, like, man, instead of collective bargaining, we're going to give you a non-fungible token that you can invest in.
Yeah.
Oh.
And what did he say? He wasn't at that. He was like, I'm not very online at the start of the clip.
I'm not a digital. He did like, I'm not a digital native. About like, if anybody, it's like Dave Rubin at a stand up. Like, anybody gay here or straight?
Yeah.
Like no, this
like,
is.
I'm old. I don't get the internet.
Who's a digital native? Right? Like, no, can we move past the raise hands part and just hear you give your union busting lecture?
Yep. Yeah. But he did it with a smile. So that's all that matters. That's the Starbucks way. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Ken Klippenstein. We are back, and we are joined by the illustrious, wonderful Ken Klippenstein of The Intercept. Thanks so much for being here, Ken. Really appreciate it.
Hey, good to talk to you, Emma.
Yeah, good to see you. You have a new Amazon piece out that I definitely want to dive into because, one, it's newsworthy and it's timely, but two, it's dystopian and oddly, darkly hilarious in its own way as well. But first, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the background for this because, you know, people might who watch the show have heard of Chris Smalls. They've heard of this Amazon effort for a few years now, but like, I think the unionization effort, that is. I think like telling a brief summary of where it started to where it is now is useful just to get people to remind people of really how this was a David versus Goliath situation and how this started due to the fact that Amazon was not respecting its employees' health concerns and safety concerns at the start of the pandemic in April. And that's really where this started in Staten Island, I guess, specifically. And now 2 years later, it's been this massive success. So, do you mind just giving a quick, bit of background on the Staten Island unionization effort or
sure.
success
so,
now?
Sure. So what's interesting about what Chris Smalls is saying is, in his tweets and his statements, he said, if Amazon had just given us a little bit earlier, we wouldn't be asking for all this stuff later now that we are, but they forced us to because they wouldn't give us a little bit earlier. And that little bit was in 2020 during the, you know, onset of the pandemic. One of his coworkers came down sick with COVID, and he and other workers in the warehouse, I think it's a fulfillment center in Staten Island, were concerned about the lack of safety protocols. I've been reporting on Amazon for a number of years now, and I got all sorts of tips from people at fulfillment centers, just like he was at, saying that their bosses were not making reasonable accommodations for them to, for example, social distance or to, you know, have workers come in at certain times so that you don't have everyone standing shoulder to shoulder and, you know, creating the conditions for spreading this terrible illness. And so when his friend came down sick, that was sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back. And he and a few coworkers took part in a walkout just asking for basic workplace protection so they wouldn't catch COVID. And he was fired as a result of that. And what was extraordinary about that is that after he was fired, that's really the genesis of this whole union effort. It sounds like, you know, they would have been fine to just have the, like you said, the little bit early, just these reasonable accommodations so they don't get sick. And, you know, once he was fired, it's like, well, we might as well go for it. Let's try to unionize this thing. And it was unusually vitriolic the way that Amazon went after him. So an internal memo leaked from senior management, including Jeff Bezos, took part in a meeting where they said, you know, this young man, he's about 33 years old. He's black. They said, and they made a statement saying, you know, we want to make this guy the face of the movement because he will discredit it because he's, I'm trying to remember what the wording was. This memo was published by Vice News. It was, he's inarticulate and not well spoken. And, you know, people can make of that what they will. It sounds to me like there's a certain, racial overtones to how they're saying those things. And lo and behold, that guy that they thought was inarticulate and I think they said not particularly smart, he ends up pulling off the biggest upset in terms of labor victories in decades. The former chief labor correspondent for the New York Times said, "This is the most stunning labor victory I've seen in my entire career." He's been covering these things for like 40 years.
Yeah. And that's such a striking detail in comparison to, like, I was reading a piece in The Prospect where they interviewed a bunch of the organizers who worked with Chris, between how they describe Chris, his fellow employees, as, one of the best employees there, and how it was a shock to the system that he was fired, versus how the corporate structure describes him, which is like filled with contempt, derision, dismissiveness, racism, and just like plain disconnection from their employees altogether. Because if they knew how he was perceived in the Staten Island Center, they maybe wouldn't have made that move, although maybe they're arrogant enough to do so anyway.
Yeah, it's really striking. I should point out too that he managed to unionize this independently without the support of an established union. And so, if they had succeeded in unionizing with an experienced union of the sort that is helping the folks in the fulfillment center in Bessemer, Alabama, and are getting really close, but did not have the blowout that Smalls and his group did in Long Island, that in itself would be an amazing accomplishment. But to do it with no established union backing, the money and experience that brings with it is really extraordinary.
100%. And you mentioned some of your other reporting on Amazon plants. I just wanted to remind people that this is not the only reporting that you've done on Amazon as well. In December 2021, there was a tornado that killed 6 workers in Illinois, and you spoke to some people about how they basically got zero emergency training. If you don't mind just talking about that, because I do think it paints a broader picture about Amazon's practices.
Yeah, so in that story, I spoke with a former Amazon, it was a safety expert. She had worked in public safety for a number of years, and so she was familiar with what tends to be the processes in, industrial facilities and workplaces. And she said that by and away, this was the worst that she'd ever experienced. And like you said, they didn't have protocols in place for, in the event of an extreme weather event, kind of best practices in place for what to do. And these, in addition to that, the sounds like the warehouses are not built in such a way that, it's going to provide workers the protection they need in those kind of situations, which is going to, only be more and more of a concern as climate change increases the, extreme weather events. And so, after speaking to her, I was sort of surprised by that, because I figured, I didn't think Amazon was going to be great, but I figured maybe they'd be more or less like the rest of the workplaces that people go into. And so I started interviewing other people. They told similar stories of fires going on and not being evacuated for some cases. I think it was like a couple hours before they even were taken out of the facility in Phoenix, Arizona, if I remember correctly. And so I just kept hearing more and more stories like this. That's the theme of all of the reporting that I've done in this, is thinking I have some sense of that it's not great, and then realizing, whoa, it's significantly worse than I thought.
Yeah, and just my main takeaway from that, and also just Chris's initial firing, is like, he was fired in April 2020 for making these complaints about COVID. Do people remember what we knew about COVID in April 2020? I think a lot of people, we eventually masked, like, but that must have been maybe a week before the masks were recommended at a certain point. Like, in March, I was still going to the drugstore with gloves on at the start to pick out groceries. I mean, there was not even an understanding of how the virus was spread. And so that's how quickly Amazon forced its workers back into working under these conditions, with very, very little knowledge about what the virus was and how their safety would be impacted. So just, that paired with your other stories just shows how worker safety is not even barely a priority there, if not there's zero priority taken.
Yeah, the strategy of the company is to just, get the most productivity out of a worker that you can and discard them. I mean, that's literally the strategy of the company. They don't intend for you to work there for, you know, like workplaces of the past. You know, you talk to somebody who worked for Ford in the 1950s. It could be a lifetime union job they could look forward to. Amazon's fine if you want to come in and work on a part-time basis for a year as a contractor, then you leave. That's their business strategy.
Yeah. So let's turn then to your latest piece. So Amazon is basically in response to, or this was in the works before, but it definitely sheds light on like how they are likely to respond to hopefully more unionization efforts throughout the country. They are planning on using this internal messaging system that blocks terms like slave labor, prisons, restrooms, aka if the employees are complaining internally on the messaging service within Amazon about the conditions on Amazon, in Amazon, it's not going to get to the other employees in their supposedly positivity promoting messaging app.
Yeah, but the story was so absurd that when I first got the tip that from someone that I've known for a while and is surprisingly senior within the company, I thought this can't be real. And I spent, I can't tell you how long I spent trying to verify and make sure that this is true, because it just seems so off the wall. I mean, not just the union terms, but words like slave labor and even ones like ethics was to be flagged and blocked if people used it in this internal messaging app. And I was like, this can't be real. And the more I dig in, I find more and more corroborating evidence. Then I call, you know, their PR flack, and, you know, I have her comment in the story. I think it basically confirms a lot of it. And, you know, lo and behold, it's true. I don't even know what to say. It's shocking. It bespeaks an irrational attitude at the top, I think, to think that this is going to have any sort of effect. People are going to not unionize because you can't use the word union in your text, in your company text. You know, they'll just go to iMessage or their personal SMS, their cell phone. So on the one hand, it's irrational because I can't imagine it's effective at you know, what they would seem to be trying to do. And on the other hand, it seems like there's a lot of hubris going on if you're going to do this and think that it's not going to leak eventually. I would imagine employees are going to notice. If you look at the this is based on a lot of documentation that I was given kind of detailing the program. It said that it wouldn't notify the other user when it was sent through. So, you know, maybe they wouldn't notice it at first, but I have to imagine over time they're going to be like, why are certain messages not going through? What's that about? They're going to find, but apparently they don't care. You know, they want to, they went far enough ahead that this isn't a pilot program, and they're, you know, they have very detailed plans as to, you know, how and where and when they're going to roll it out. So I don't know what to say. I was really shocked by it. And this is, you know, I've covered them for a while. So I thought I'd seen, I thought I had a baseline for them, and apparently I did not.
Well, didn't they also have a pilot program for, which, you know, it ended up getting so much blowback for monitoring bracelets that would buzz you if you were not working at the efficiency standards of like what the computer basically says if you took too long of a restroom break? I mean, that's why restroom is also banned there, right? They don't even want you to waste 1 minute going to the bathroom, and that might even be talking about going to the bathroom.
Yeah, it was like an ironic joke that a leftist would make on Twitter, you know, that you can't tweet the word, that you can't post the word bathroom. Like, I couldn't believe it. But yeah, it's true. I don't know what to say. I mean, you would think, I would have thought that they would be a little bit more scrupulous given the context right now, that they just won this union election, that the whole country is watching unions across the country. This is a shot in the arm for them. They're feeling more emboldened to try actions themselves. You think they would be more careful, but I mean, again, talking to these employees, this is the impression I get, is that they're not being listened to. And that's, to me, what this story shows, is that, you know, if they had any paid any sort of attention to employees, they wouldn't be doing this stuff, because they would understand how poorly it would have been received.
Right. So can you take us to the internal meeting with these executives in November 2021, when this was floated? Because really just the characterization of this app as, you know, we want to find a way to allow our workers to give other workers, quote, shout outs, like kudos, basically. And then on the side, we're also going to monitor it and block certain phrases from being used. But union busting is definitely not the primary objective of our messaging service. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah. So in November of last year, there was a high-level meeting involving company executives. One of them was the CEO of their consumer side of the business, Dave Clark. And so they were all discussing, and Dave said, you know, we got to make this app that's going to improve employee retention because they have serious retention problems. You might wonder why that is, but it doesn't, to my knowledge, they didn't address that there. They were talking about how to solve it. And so one idea they had was to come up with this app, like you said, called Shoutouts. You're supposed to shout out other coworkers that you think are doing a good job. And the idea is that this is supposed to raise morale, keep people around, and encourage sort of one-on-one interactions. It's not supposed to be like a board that everyone can see. It's like one-on-one. And so he actually, the CEO, Dave Clark, compares it to Bumble, the dating app. He's like, we want it to resemble Bumble, where it's going to encourage this one-on-one connection between people. It's all this very corporate speak, like, you know, we're going to have, it's like how Facebook, we're bringing people together, that kind of thing. You know?
Right.
And so they're discussing how they're going to go about that. And quickly, one of the concerns that's brought up, they during the meeting, they refer to the, quote, dark side of social media. I know for a fact that that was the terminology that they used, dark side of social media, by which they meant, you know, things that could, you know, ruin the vibe, make people detract from giving people these, you know, positive vibes and the morale boost that they're looking for. And so they,
no wages, just vibes, no work protection, just vibes. Yeah. Right. That's the motto.
So they identified that as a problem and they said, okay, well, we're going to address this. And then, you know, fast forward a couple months later, they end up, you know, concocting this social media platform that I'm describing where you can send these shout outs. It's kind of like a, it's like a gamified system. It's kind of like Xbox where when you beat a game or level up or whatever, you get some kind of achievement, you know, they were doing that for the work. Like you're going to get achievements just for, you know, showing up on time 10 days in a row, whatever. It's very like we're saying Offset, it's very B.F. Skinner. Like the whole idea is rewards and punishments, you know, we're going to give them positive reinforcement. And so, they're describing the system. And so these shout outs that they're supposed to give to each other, you can put text in it because they want to individualize it and make it, like I said before, they want to make people feel like they're close with their coworkers. And so the question was raised, well, then what if they, you know, do something that, like I said before, ruins the vibes or brings things down? So, and so they have a whole list of terms that they're not, that will get flagged and literally just black hole. They'll just remove the post. It won't even go through and it won't notify either party that it didn't go through, to my knowledge. And so this list of words, some of them make sense. It's like, you know, racial epithets, slurs. I think everyone's fine with that. But then my source noticed in the discussions, in the high level discussions about this, that there were concerns in the context of all these union efforts. What if they start talking about unionizing? And so a list of terms pertinent to unions was created, and the, you know, their press flack says, oh, this is just about harassment. Maybe, you know, the implication is maybe a union member is harassing them or something. You know, people can conclude what they want, but the fact is that the list of words that gets blocked includes, you know, unions, bathrooms, living wage, rate, as in like pay rate, that kind of thing. So all of these things pertinent to organized labor, not just that, but even things like identity and accessibility, like things that you would think of as not, you know, these are not harmful. Like, I don't see that as like a dangerous thing to talk about. Well, necessarily, it's like, but yeah, they, that was, so this is one of their solutions to this problem of the dark side of social media, which is, you know, what if they're talking about things we don't want them talking about?
You mentioned, you know, the hubris of Amazon here, and that's what sticks out to me. Like, do they really think their employees are dumb enough to organize their union effort over like the equivalent of company Slack, except not even Slack? It's just, it's monitored and created by Amazon. I mean, that's not what's going to happen here. They're going to organize outside of it, and they're going to be smart enough to do so. But I guess if somebody slips up, makes a mistake, this is a way to keep a tab on them and understand, okay, this person is thinking about unionizing or might have connections to others who are unionizing, or even just the small potato stuff might be all lollygagging a little bit when they're washing their hands in the sink.
Right. I think, yeah, you make an important point. And I think that's why they lost. I've tried to read as much as I can about how this succeeded because I'm curious about it. I want to know. And a theme I see brought up again and again, it was how out of touch management was in its attempt to try to explain to the rank and file why this wasn't in their interests. And you know, contrary to that, how in touch with people's feelings the organizers were, because so if you look at the amount of money they spent, the union organizers only had, I think, $130,000, whereas Amazon spent like over 10 million. It was like unprecedented figure, completely insane. And so, you know, the question is, well, how are they able to beat these guys? And I think it has an important message, which is that it's not just about money. And, you know, a lot of, you know, my friends in politics, they'll do this kind of analysis and say, well, you know, money wins at the end of the day. You know, what can you do? Campaign finance is what it is. The reality is that's not the only domain in which conflict is fought, I don't think. There's also questions of, you know, who's popular and you know, who's able to articulate something that resonates with people. And it turns, and I think the common sort of motif to all the reporting on how they succeeded was that they were able to capture the sense that, oh, this guy's more like me than these anti-union corporate consultants that were brought in. And so I guess I'll trust the guy that's like me.
Well, that comes back to like the point we were talking about at the beginning, which is the complete disparity between how Chris Smalls's fellow employees talked about him as an employee in the warehouse and also as an organizer versus how the corporate ghouls spoke about him in right. those like condescending terms. It's just, you know, that is indicative of the whole, that is the whole problem pretty much right there in front
totally.
Of me. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about how this is not, or ask you if you could talk a bit about how this is, I say that all the time, geez. How this is nothing new for Amazon. The fact that they have tried these social media programs in the past. They infamously a few years ago they had that 2018 Twitter. What was it? Twitter Army bot.
Yeah, it was like a bot. Well, what's interesting about it is they weren't bots, which is what was particularly disturbing to me. So they had all of these Twitter accounts with maybe like a couple hundred followers, and then it would have the box emoji for like the, you know, you're getting your Amazon box shipped to you in 2 days or whatever. And they would all say these really creepy, it was kind of like a North Korea sort of thing where it's like, you know, we love working at Amazon. The leader is very fair and just. So I don't remember what this game was. Everybody was creeped out by it. They were all like, oh, this is, must be some kind of bot thing. So I started looking into it, and what I found out from internal documents describing the planning around the project was that these were actual human beings that were typing these things. This was not automated by any means. It's sort of like a Philip Dick novel where it's like, oh my God, the robots have converged so much with humans that you can't even tell the difference anymore. And what does that say about humanity? What does that say about a robot, about automate? And so it turned out these are actual, you know, paid people who themselves were warehouse workers, and they were encouraged to kind of, I think there was at one point in the documents where it says something like they were handpicked for their quote great sense of humor. And so they were told to just go on Twitter and snark at the haters, at anybody that's saying, you know, Amazon needs better worker conditions or, you know, wages or whatever it is. They were instructed to, you know, go and joke in your own voice about how I've never been mistreated here. I actually really like it. And maybe you're the one that needs to work here so you can see what it's really like. And so they had this whole, it was a bunch of accounts, and they were all instructed to format their like Twitter bios in the same way, so you knew that they were, I think they were called like Amazon online ambassadors or something like that. And it's just indicative of, you know, what happens when you have a $1.5 trillion behemoth of a tech company. They're going to start, you know, trying these schemes and try, and, you know, it's a very Silicon Valley culture where, you know, we're going to have this clever sort of, you know, web 3.0 solution to everything. And I'm sure, you know, I imagine I thought at some executive level, they're like, oh, this is really going to get the detractors when they see all these employees talking about how much they enjoy working here. And of course that became a huge meme. Everyone was horrified by it. So again, yeah, I would say the theme is like just being fundamentally out of touch with how ordinary people think that this army would be reassuring to anybody.
It's like an inside outside strategy too. Like we'll have an internal social media where we completely clamp down on what people can say. And then externally we will have a social media blitz, which is like basically completely artificial and manufactured, where we talk about how amazing the dear leader is and how wonderful our conditions are as we're, you know, stifling any kinds of dissent internally. And I just want to like go a little bit, before we let you go, through some of the words that are blocked here. I hate, that's the term that you can't say.
Negativity. Nope. You don't want that negative. You got to get that negative energy out of you.
Right. It totally ruins the vibes, and you're not able to give your shout outs to your other fellow employees if you're talking about how much you hate working there. Union, naturally. Bullying, harassment. This is concerning.
That's what was... there's like safety relevant stuff here. If somebody is like concerned about something, that could be important for management to know, even just from the perspective of like risk reduction.
Yes!
So I was totally shocked by that.
Prison threat, diversity, ethics, slave labor, plantation, unity, vaccine, representation, unfair, freedom, restrooms, robots.
Freedom. It's like
freedom.
A heavy-handed, you know, totalitarian movie or something. Jesus Christ.
Again, you can't mess with the vibes there. But yeah, everybody should check out Ken's piece because you dive a little bit more deeply into this. But Ken Klippenstein, reporter for The Intercept, you've been doing great reporting on Ken Klippenstein. I'm sorry, I always mix those two
up.
Right. I was like, did I say it the right way? No, well, I said it the wrong
that's
way.
That's a risk you take when you have a bizarre name, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, but the alliteration, you make it work. and I'm also, Sam's just rubbing off on me. Ken, everybody check out his reporting over at The Intercept, and I'm sure you'll have more great stories to come. Thanks so much for being here today. Dude, really appreciate it.
Good to catch up with you, Emma.
Yeah, good to catch up. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk a bit about the IPCC report out of the United Nations from yesterday. It's concerning. Be right back. We are back. Concerning IPCC report out of the United Nations. Basically, unless we have greenhouse gas emissions in 3 years, we are going to set off a chain reaction that is going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to reverse, of increased hurricanes, natural disasters in general, as well as certain ecosystems falling apart and our planet irrevocably changing. So, I mean, kind of serious. Nat Geo here writes about the four urgent takeaways from this climate report. To limit warming to manageable levels, the world has only a few years to stop using fossil fuels completely. Unless global greenhouse gas emissions peak no later than 3 years from now and are cut nearly in half by 2030. Okay, so they can, I misspoke a bit earlier. They can peak no later than 3 years from now, but they have to be cut in half by, you know, in less than a decade. The world will likely experience extreme climate impacts according to the latest report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. According to the report, if urgent action is not taken, humanity will fail to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, a threshold for a future of more fires, drought, storms, and more. Greenhouse gases in Earth's atmosphere are at their highest levels in human history. Emissions of the gases fell sharply in 2020 as a result of the pandemic lockdowns, but in 2021, they equaled or even surpassed the record in 2019, when they were about 12% higher than in 2010, and 54% higher than in 1990. 54% higher in 1990 when the IPCC report was first published. This is like the one silver lining that is cited in this IPCC report. The rate of increase in greenhouse gas emissions was slower between 2010 and 2019 than over the previous decade, and technologies and policies do now exist that would enable sharp reductions in the emissions if the political will exists to implement them. Like, we're in this country kowtowing to a guy in Joe Manchin who's upset that we're not returning to coal, who's upset that we are not using more coal to help himself out financially, by the way, and burning more coal and contributing to climate change to that degree. And this is like treated as a, I don't know, there's both sides to this debate in this country, which is just insanity. And like, the, again, the budgeting that Biden is proposing in terms of climate mitigation doesn't even approach or come close to approaching what is necessary to do here. For there to be any hope of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, the use of coal must be slashed by 95% worldwide. So as we're having a debate on whether or not, to what degree we should use coal in this country, right? I mean, it's a good side. One side says this, one side says that. We're all in agreement that some coal has to be used. I mean, this is America, right? No, no, no. 95% slashing is necessary if there's any hope of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. While consumption of oil and gas has to be reduced by 60% and 45% respectively by 2050. Fortunately for many people in many places, installing new clean energy is cheaper than operating existing fossil fuel energy, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it is getting cheaper, but the point is that the leaders specifically in this country, and that's where we're primarily focused because we are a podcast that operates in the United States and because the United States disproportionately contributes to climate change. There is not an all-out blitz in the way that there should be to get these technologies to be more widely used. And I'm sure that whenever that time does come, there will be some massive cultural backlash because gas is inherent to, you know, Christian values or something like that. From 2010 to 2019, through 2019, the cost of both solar and lithium-ion batteries declined on average by 85%, while that of wind energy decreased by 55%. Such declines have enabled significantly more widespread deployment of these technologies, except not like deployment that's proportionate with that price decrease, frankly. Additionally, the report notes that the funding of renewable energies falls well short of what is needed and, in fact, continues to pale in comparison to the subsidies given to fossil fuels. It concludes that just ending such subsidies could reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 10% by 2030. Yeah, but, you know, we're worried about the executives over at ExxonMobil here. Deep and rapid cuts to methane emissions are also critical, Nat Geo writes. One of the most effective ways to do so is to target fugitive emissions, methane that escapes into the atmosphere during the extraction and transport of natural gas, or from long-abandoned oil wells. Yes, if anybody has read anything about these old oil wells that crop up throughout the country, which are both biohazards to communities, but also incredibly, you know, wasteful or dangerous areas that are old oil wells, they're still releasing a ton of methane. Like, there needs to be a deliberate shutdown of those, and the Biden administration should prioritize that. I think it's pretty dangerous to do so, but that's why the government needs to fund money to do so safely. Because not only is it contributing to climate change to this degree, it's also hurtful to communities, as I mentioned. The IPCC calculates that fugitive emissions account for about 32% of methane released into the atmosphere globally and 6% of all greenhouse gas emissions. CO2 removal will be a key stopgap with caveats. So you can read more about this IPCC report and what is recommended here. This Nat Geo piece has kind of like a 4-bullet-point recommendation. Summary of the IPCC report. But the bottom line is that we are not on track or even close to the standards that we need to meet in order to go down a path where we have no way of getting back in terms of the effects of climate change. And I know that that's depressing, but this is part of the issue with the fact that we elected a weak centrist as our president, and the fact that before him, the president, Trump, you know, he slashed shredded the Paris Climate Accord, which was didn't even go far enough at all. And neither of these presidents have made any meaningful step forward in terms of our mitigation efforts and cutting down on greenhouse emissions or methane emissions. So,
I mean, that we're exactly where we would be. understanding that the oil industry for over a century has been basically a instrument of, I don't know what you want to call it, fascism maybe, whether from like Standard Oil or you look at literally who was fueling the planes for Franco in the Spanish Civil War, the planes that were provided by Hitler. It was Texaco Oil from the U.S., or whether it's BP in Iran. Like these industries are the ones that need to be partners in any sort of coups over the past hundreds of years. And that's why we don't have a real democracy here either. Our democracy is a complete sham because this isn't a real debate among people. This is the debates you see on cable news is a simulation designed to obscure the reality that we have these powerful interests that have basically controlled governments by violent means or sort of covert means of just money influence. And they have foreclosed democracy to the extent that we might not be able to save the planet from ecological destruction. And so like the idea that they could be partners, no, we need to get to a point where we are nationalizing these people and treating them like the outlaws they've been acting like for 100 plus years.
Yep. I mean, and like, again, this is at the forefront of the debate in terms of Russia and their invasion of Ukraine right now. And yet we're not having an existential question about our reliance on oil and gas. Like, you know, the EU is maybe going to adopt a resolution that bans Russian coal. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Right. Like, OK, that's fine in terms of like a reaction to what we're seeing in Ukraine and to the invasion. But this is why I was hard on Jen Psaki when she was answering these questions from Ducey and other right wing journalists about, you know, what's it going to do to gas prices if we impose these sanctions and et cetera, you know, when really it's like Russia's invasion that has set gas prices to this degree. Like you have to reset the conversation and you have to say, well, no, this is why we need to get off of fossil fuels, because our reliance on this is a national security liability. She can phrase it that way. And it's also untenable because we are at the whim of these petrostates and these massive countries that are very oil rich. And it creates insecurity among the general population here. And we could, instead of just drilling more here, we could think a little bit more. We could think big for the first time ever and try to implement a Green New Deal. And yet, we get, you know, none of that. We get none of that. The fact that we have a Democratic president and we're not talking about climate change like this, I mean, at least once a week, and they're not resetting the conversation in that way. I mean, it's depressing.
The reality of the situation is they don't plan to address it. The Joe Biden and those folks, they don't plan to address it. It's going to be mitigation, all mitigation, and trying to, you know, get whoever on the arc that you can.
All right, folks, with that, we are going to head into the fun half. But first, oh, I hear Nomi. Oh, wait, they don't hear you. They don't hear you yet, Nomi, but we're going to bring you in a second. But first, Matt, what's happening over on Left Reckoning?
Yeah, Wasni Lambre is going to be on Left Reckoning tomorrow evening. We're going to be talking about the player empowerment era, what brought it about, whether that's an accurate description for it. And for instance, like, say, and I don't know if this is the case for either Kyrie or Ben Simmons, but an athlete has enough money to just say, I don't need to play this year because I'm not happy. And from I like to see, you know, the best athletes on the court competing at all times. That's a difficult thing. But from a worker empowerment angle, that's a very interesting state of affairs for players and owners to find themselves. And how people react to it, I think, is going to be really interesting. This is similar to that Applebee's memo that said, it's going to be good for us that people can't afford their bills, like for gas, because they're going to need to work for us. What happens when the workers can actually decide if they want to work or not? So that's tomorrow night, patreon.com/leftreckoning. We also talked to my buddy Chris about his run for office in Dallas and the attack on public schools through the guise of anti-CRT and anti-LGBT sort of hysteria campaigns that are aimed at peeling off support for public schools in rural areas. So you can check that out, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
Nice. All right. Bradley's going to bring Nomi in. Here she is. But Hi. Let me just say, really quickly. This is like a new era in the NFL too. And I think like the NBA really led the way in that. I just want the lower and middle class of these leagues to get the same, treatment and same workers' rights as the upper. But
oh man, you see what happens in minor league sports. It is not pretty.
Not pretty. Nomi, how are you?
I'm lovely. How are you guys?
Doing well. You might have noticed that it's just me today. Sam's son is sick, so he's out for the day, but we'll be able to break down some of these ridiculous clips we have teed up in the fun half.
I'm so excited. It's not International Women's Day. I can't believe he let us be on together.
I know, right?
Outside of the one day. No, I'm kidding. That's the last time. For those who weren't watching, that's the last time we did this.
Yes. Accidentally. But what's happening over on the Noma Key Show?
So we, tonight on YouTube and Rockfin, we have Tom Hartman on, who's going to talk about, he has this hidden history series that he's been doing because Tom Hartman just generates so many books. It's incredible, actually. But this one is on Big Brother in America, how the death of privacy and the rise of surveillance threatens the U.S. and our democracy. And then tomorrow, during our normal time at 8 p.m. on YouTube and Twitch and all the platforms, we're going to be talking about SCOTUS's rejection of the GOP redistricting maps in North Carolina and Pennsylvania and how that affects, everything from how Democrats are going to turn out, but specifically AAPI electorate in the midterms. Because in North Carolina, you see a lot of shifting immigrant communities, Georgia, of course, as well. So it's fascinating conversations with Varun Nicor. And then it's Solidarity Wednesdays. We have Ben Dixon on and then Arun Chowdhury, who's going to be talking about what's happening in Europe, the rise of fascism there, because that's his beat. That's what he works on. And Rep Rab from Pennsylvania, who's in the middle of that redistricting, just constant war on leftists right in that legislature. So, and then speaking of education, on Friday, we've been doing a lot on education because it's not just an attack on rural education. It's an attack. Largest Democratic donors are the teachers' unions. And it's also the largest group of public sector workers, and it's majority female-led. So Republicans always find a way to kill like 85 birds with one stone, and they're doing it with whatever culture wars they have, including, going after school board members in California, which they did very effectively with the recall. We're going to continue that conversation about the recall effort, CRT, with Allison Collins. Very exciting.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, that sounds great. Yeah. A packed show for sure.
Oh, that's a few shows. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm only on once a week, so I got to get it all out, guys. Come on.
Yeah, 100%. All right. Well, that will be lovely. And with that, we will head into the fun half. We'll be taking your calls, reading your IMs, 646-257-3920. See you there.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
You.
What is up, everyone? Nomi Key.
You did it!
Let's go, Brandon!
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today!
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm gonna go throw up.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So
what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-35-501-1/2 3/8
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this. Poop.
You can call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the wheat being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.